The News on BFM 89.9.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. The Malaysian real estate sector was upbeat in 2024, and this is reflected in the full-year earnings of mid-cap property developer Paramount Corporation, which scored its third year of total revenues over the 1 billion ringgit mark. Can this momentum be sustained into 2025 in light of the economic headwinds at play? I discuss this today with Jeffrey Chu, Group CEO of Paramount Corporation. Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, Jeffrey. We seem to have a standing date every year in March for a catch-up. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Shah. Great to be here.
Let's start with 2024 earnings, which you reported in February this year. You made property sales of 1.4 billion ringgit last year, while your overall revenue was 1.04 billion ringgit, only 3% higher than in 2023. This breaks a three-year double-digit revenue growth streak. Are you reaching a plateau in terms of revenue growth, where you're hitting the billion ringgit mark, but it's going to be harder to push that level up from here onwards?
A very, very insightful question. So in the property business, it's very strange because you when you make your sales, you cannot recognize your revenue until you construct it. And then you have progress billing, and that's where you can recognize into revenue. So our revenue didn't grow that much in 2024. It's because number one is that the launches that we had was a little bit later in the year. So you don't have much chance to actually do a lot of work, as well as also the sales picks up slowly throughout the year, not at the beginning of the year. So we will see the 1.4 billion of sales translated into revenue in 25 and also 26. So a little bit peculiar, you know, in the property industry compared to where I came from in the banking sector. And also I've seen a lot of industries like manufacturing, retail, F&B, all are very, when you make the sale, you recognize the revenue. Here, it's completely different. So it's a little bit of adjustment or understanding in the beginning, but nevertheless, it's interesting, and it gives the very good perspective about the future of the company when you have the sales and then you have the progress billing. Our progress billing shot up to the highest level that we had at 1.6 billion. You know, coming from a very small property development business in 2014 when I came, we will only have about 300 million of sales, and our unbilled sales was really very much around there. But now we are 1.6, and the amount of cash flow that we expected to get over the next 3 to 4 years is quite substantial.
I want to now take a look at your overseas expansion. 2024 did mark the year where you made your foray overseas in different ways, right? One of the ways which was surprising for many was the fact that you announced a stake in EcoWorld International of 21.5%. And from May last year, when you first announced the stake, your planned involvement in the company also changed. Last month, Paramount relinquished its board seat in EWI, citing conflict of interest. So walk me through how this arrangement works for Paramount, and why have you tied your prospects to EWI when it comes to overseas property activity?
Okay, Shaza, can I just take a little bit of time, you know, to explain why did we go overseas in the first place? When I started with Paramount in 2014, our sales and revenue were about 300 million in terms of property development. So we built from 300 million over all the way to 1.4 billion sales today. That's like three, four folds. So we have done that because we felt that 300 million as a property developer is just too small. And you have no reason to go overseas at all, because even domestically, you are nowhere at 300 million. So we needed to be at the 1 billion mark at least. And so we built at a CAGR of 15% growth per annum since 2014 in terms of property development, from two projects to now 10 projects that we're running. So after reaching 1 billion sales and now 1.4 billion, our revenue was stabilized at above 1 billion going forward, you know, slowly growing. So we said that we are quite big to achieve two things. One is that we can achieve efficiency. Two is that we have sufficient brand positioning in the market to make us sustainable and achieve a more quality growth going forward. So we don't need to race and chase 15% CAGR for the next 10 years because we, in a way, we are recognized in the market. We have a seat on the table. So that's what we felt that we have achieved. And it's about time that we can start to relook at what our ambition was to go overseas, not so much of just being there in overseas, but to diversify as well. Because sometimes market changes and then we have a better lever if we have an overseas market and then we also have a domestic market. So it's not like 2024, we decided to invest overseas. We started thinking about that in 2019. In fact, we started our first small foray into Bangkok in 2020. So, but of course, you know, after COVID and all that, it was challenging. But that was the first small investment overseas. When EWI came in as an opportunity in 2024, we felt that our original plan was to have 30% of our income from overseas in the long future. So we need to slowly build it. So that was a good opportunity to able to get some sort of a so-called exposure in UK and also a little bit in Australia. So it is a cheaper way to do it, you know, and without having to burn a lot of investment upfront. Like Bangkok, we got to put money a lot upfront, then we have to take the risk if the sales are not good or you cannot recover or there's a political risk or currency risk or whatever sovereign risk, you have to take the full risk. Here, we kind of like have a big brother who have been there for 7-8 years and they know the market. So we are kind of like sitting together in the bus as a co-driver or just a passenger and we can learn and we can also benefit from the so-called growth or the so-called realization and monetization of the assets. That was what we had in mind.
Okay. But I guess moving beyond what you have at the moment, well, which strategy do you favor in terms of that overseas expansion? Is it going to be a JV like what you're doing in Bangkok, or is it going to be buying stakes in an existing property company with activities abroad?
I think we are quite fortunate in a way that we're taking the position where we don't go in very big day one and I have to pay huge tuition fee. In Bangkok, our investment was only 23 million. Okay, so it's really very small. We could just write it off if things goes terribly bad, you know. We can't recover a single cent. Then we just write off 23 million. In EWI, we went in a very deep discount. So if we exit, there'll be only a small portion of losses. So, but we are learning a lot. We are learning that the fact that Malaysia sell and build model is so much safer for the developer.
Okay.
And it's so much easier to run. Because, like, for example, in Bangkok, we launched during COVID, but surprisingly, we got nearly 72% of sales at the point before we completed the project. By the time we completed the project, when we start to hand over, a lot of them decided not to take up. And they cited things like they can't get bank loans, you know, they have changed their mind, they don't like the finishing, they say that the specs are not according to what they expected and so on. And they try to walk away. And at the end, you know, we only managed to get about 30% of the 72% sales. And now we've got to rebuild the sales again. The thing is that when you have this model in Thailand, UK and Australia, you launch and you start constructing, you incur all your costs. As interest rate goes up, you bear higher costs. At the end, when you actually hand over, they say that they don't want to buy anymore because they don't have money. They think that the property price will not go up. It's going to go down. So it's a lot of risk in that segment. So
it's risky for developers, yes, but perhaps safer for consumers, knowing
absolutely
that they have that property ready for them to get if they want it.
Yes, but for a developer, it's not very good. So we learned that that's one part about markets where they have this so-called build and sell. We also learn in terms of a foreign player operating in a foreign country. You look at all your revenue, where does it come from? Most of the time, it's all local buyers. So all your revenue are locals. And then all your expense, your procurement, your construction, nearly 90% or more than that are also local. It's a very local business. So, for example, if we go to Bangkok on our own or we go to UK on our own, we are a new foreign player. Nobody knows Paramount. So they're going to, if you do a contract tender, they're going to price very high because, number one, they're not sure whether you could pay or not, right? Number two is that since I do not know you, why should I give you a good price? So again, in terms of even procurement, you are on the disadvantage. In terms of branding, you want to sell your product in UK like Paramount. We don't have brand presence there. In Malaysia, you know, when you say Paramount in Klang Valley, you say, oh, yeah, good developer, good quality. They will finish their project on time, you know, and they were willing to pay a little bit more than another developer who is new from other countries. So in that sense, we are relooking in terms of whether does it really make sense to be investing in countries, foreign countries, as a full operator or very much more as a strategic investor.
Okay.
So that's the thing that we are learning, we are evaluating. But nevertheless, we are very clear that we want to diversify our portfolio from purely domestic to a little bit more in overseas the next 5 to 10 years.
Is it still 30%, that target of revenue?
Malaysia is doing so well compared to so many countries in the world. So we felt that over the next 5 years, we would probably tweak a little bit to try to project more like a 20% instead of 30%. Mm-hmm. You know, and we hope they will reach there. But if the foreign countries that the opportunity is greater, things stabilizes and move very quickly in a positive manner, then we might retweak it back 30% for the next 5 years later on.
Okay. You know,
there's
it's
no
a,
rush.
It's a moving target, nothing fixed in stone.
But we want to diversify offshore.
I'm speaking to Jeffrey Chu, Group CEO of mid-cap property developer Paramount Corporation. We'll have more
something that's moral
after the break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The Breakfast Grill, brought to you The News on BFM 89.9. Number one 5G network.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Breakfast Grill. With me on the show today is Jeffrey Chu, Group CEO of Paramount Corporation. Now, earlier, Jeffrey, we were focusing on Paramount's overseas expansion and the strategies that you're putting in place to grow your presence there in different ways, and it's still an exploratory stage. I want to zoom into the Malaysian property segment where your project launches this year. How many are you planning, and what's in the mix in terms of residential versus commercial, high-rise versus landed, regional location? What's that picture looking like for 2025?
We launched quite a fair bit last year, especially at the end of the year. We launched the biggest 2.4 billion of launches. You know, we never had such a huge launch. Mm-hmm. And the reason is not because we are so gung-ho for that year. It's just that the year before, we were supposed to launch larger, but we kind of like got stuck with some approval, and we only launched the year 800 million instead of 1 billion plus. So kind of like you add the 2 years, 3 billion for 2 years, so it's 1.5 billion. So we are launching a mixture usually, all landed, all residential. We like to have it within 30% landed and then 70% high-rise. So in terms of location, we are still very much focused on Klang Valley. Now we include KL, which part of Klang Valley now used to be before there was no KL city. Then the northern side, Sungai Petani, and also Penang. So those are the three areas that we will concentrate in.
Mm. What's your sales target for the year?
1.5 billion.
Okay.
Okay. We felt that we have moved from 1 billion level the last 2 years to 1.4. We'll stay at 1.4, 1.5 level. Then we will probably grow slower to the 2 billion mark. Mm. You know, maybe 10%, 8 to 10% a year.
Okay. So you had quite a large group of launches last year, right? And I think I want to talk a little bit about what that take-up rate is. If I compare two projects that were launched at the same time last year, the Atera in PJ has a take-up rate of 43%, while the Ashwood has a 79% take-up rate. What explains the difference in customer interest for these properties, and how is this reflected in your overall take-up rate?
This is the question that most analysts will ask. You know, it depends on which point of time you ask me that question. Like last year, year-end, our take-up rate was 78%. So those people who are listening, who are bankers, who wants to be in property development, needs to really understand property development is a completely different play. So last year, we launched 2.4 billion. And if we have launched it in the first quarter, then a lot of the sales will happen during the year. So at the end of December, the take-up rate will be higher. But if you launch late in the year, the take-up rate will be, in terms of average, it's all math, right? It will be slightly lower. So we ended up last year at 58% take-up rate. Now, like Ashwood doing fantastically well, despite the fact that we launched, you know, in April. Yeah, April, May. So that's actually very, very strong. But there are some projects that we're just doing what we expected. But there are one or two projects that we find that a bit slower, honestly. Not Atera. Atera is fine. The projects that we were a little bit slower was Cyberjaya, because we launched a very different product where the buyers doesn't understand. They want a showroom to see how the house will look like. But unfortunately, at that point of time, we didn't have a showroom. So we kind of have an outside showroom, which is a half showroom, meaning we have a ground floor. Down, they say that after seeing the one floor, some people have booked. Some people say, no, I want to see the second floor and the third floor. So for Cyberjaya, a little bit slower, but we are completing the sales gallery and the showroom within the next 2 months, so that we hope that that will pick up the sales for this year.
So you think that's more of a marketing function and not because of a demand function?
And also a mathematical problem.
It's not because the clientele that you're targeting are perhaps not looking to spend on big ticket items like housing purchases.
No, I think the market is still very much intact. I watch the statistics from NAPIC every quarter, and as far as demand is concerned, it's still very strong. Supply side is coming up, as you say, Shah. We want to see whether it's continuing being strong.
Your present GDV land bank is valued at 6.2 billion ringgit. You've mentioned that you're aiming for 400 million ringgit worth of land replenishment deals this year in order to sustain this pipeline of projects for the next 5 years. You only made one acquisition last year. That was Brunsfield Residence in Jalan Yutan. That's adjacent to two existing properties that you're already developing. Is that the strategy that you're going to be applying for land deals this year? You're going to be looking at what's adjacent to what you already have and seeing how you can leverage on that.
I think, yes, in terms of where we're going to be, we try to replicate our success in the areas, because I said much earlier in the back years that once you're successful, you have the brand presence there, you know the local authorities, you know all the earth problems, earthwork problems that you have, you need to capitalize on that and build on that. So sometimes you got no choice, there's no more land over, you just have to move on. But I think in terms of land banking, we have enough land for 4 years more to launch. Okay. So for us, we realize that, we try to squeeze as much efficiency by carrying less interest costs on our books. You know, in property development, again, a lot of people don't realize developers can capitalize interest on the land that they buy. Even they pay interest to the bank, they don't have to charge to the P&L until they launch. So in a way, we need to manage the size of our land bank in our books, you know. So that's why I always keep it a little bit lean. And we thought that our sales was going to be 1.2, 1.3, but now it's 1.4, and then this year is 1.5. So we are using a little bit more land than what we needed to. So we need to go out there and acquire land. Mm. So we did one, 145 million, and we have not completed the transaction. So when we completed, we could either do a refit, which can turn around with a lot of profits at a fast turnaround. So ROE will be fantastically high at the 20% level. But the GDV will be lower. So we're also exploring the possibility of redeveloping it. So it's subject to the authorities if we can, and also whether there's enough, not too much complaint from the neighborhood. If we can do that, then we potentially can have a 900 million GDV. So it gives us about close to 1 billion GDV for our land bank from 5.5 billion. Then, of course, for us, we wanted to put on another 400 million ringgit of land acquisition, so that will allow us to develop about 2 billion GDV for this year.
And where are you looking? Is that going to be in the Klang Valley?
It will be a Klang areas that we are comfortable in. Again, Klang Valley, the city KL area. Then, of course, it can be in the Cyberjaya area. And also, we are very successful in the Greenwoods at Sepang area. So that's another growth area that we're looking at it. So usually we will look at places that we are more familiar.
Okay. So in light of that then, seeing that you're looking at places where perhaps there's already development, the Urban Renewal Act, that would be something that would be of benefit to Paramount Corporation. Then what are the opportunities that you see for Paramount stemming from the URA if it ever comes to being, right? What kind of doors would this open for you?
Absolutely a very positive move that the Malaysia is doing, if we can get this through. Some of the properties that we've seen, like 30 years old, 40 years old, it's just completely not livable. And even some that is, you can say is still livable, but are not generating enough yield. And one of the very clear example is the development that we did in KL. The Atrium project, the first project in KL, was a hotel. Okay. And the hotel was struggling. They can't even attract and even cover their costs. So they had no choice. They have to sell it, you know. But if they have kept it, okay, and that approvals is not given to rejuvenate or to repurpose the building from a hotel to a service apartment, it would have been an eyesore after 30 years, you know. So we have taken over. We just strip everything from outside. The superstructure remains, and we managed to create now the Atrium, a fantastic project that we have built. When you have this new act that come in place, if it does come, you kind of like have probably a 30 years old, 40 years, 50 years old, have a chance to be repurposed and make it useful for people to use, you know.
How would you respond to the pushback then? Because there is the valid worry that developers could lowball homeowners, that certain homeowners may not get fair market value for their properties. So how would you assuage those concerns, or what's the trade-off there?
I think if you watch a lot of Hong Kong movies and Chinese movies, you see all these practices in those parts of the world. But Malaysia is a very much more decent society. And if you look at all the property players and all the corporates in Malaysia, not that we are governed by, you know, authorities or SC or Bursa or Bank Negara or whatever in different aspects of industry, but the fact is that even without those governance, we feel responsible.
You're asking us to trust the humanity of developers.
Yes, not developers, okay, the society of Malaysia. In fact, like I said, even as a property developer, I told a lot of people who wants to actually sell the land to us, you got to trust us. If you want to do a JV, you got to trust us. And you see in a lot of our JV agreements, we are not out there to take advantage of the landowner. If you feel that you want a higher price, let's put a formula. If I can sell higher, I give you more share of the land price. So a lot of Malaysian developers, or Malaysian in general, I think we are very decent. Similarly, I think that when we do apply the Act, most of the developers will also kind of like accord the same decency to individual house owner as well.
Okay. You know? Yeah. All right. That's what people are hoping for. But again, it's all the proof of the pudding is going to be in the eating, right? Jeffrey, Paramount has been described as a rather unexciting stock. Given that there are more than 100 property counters on Bursa Malaysia, why would investors opt for you over bigger cap names?
I think if you look at the dividend, we have paid nearly $1.40 of dividend since I joined. So if you bought the shares anywhere during that period, your share is free and you're generating more than 8% yield on the share price on a yearly basis, even you buy today. And that's the reason why, in terms of the liquidity of the shares, a lot of shareholders are so happy keeping the shares that they don't want to sell. So if people don't sell, a lot of fund managers told us that your liquidity volume is not high enough, and when they start buying the share price move up too quickly and they cannot accumulate a big portion. So in that way, that makes us a bit not so exciting, but we're looking at it. We're looking at it and see how we can change the way that our shares are being treated in the market. And we will talk to some investment bankers, some brokerage house to see what are the ways to improve the situation so they can be more exciting. I mean, 15% EPS, 8% dividend yield.
How much more exciting
PE
could
of 6.5,
want, right?
I will buy anybody who wants to sell at $1. I will buy for myself because it becomes my retirement annuity. Okay.
Jeffrey, thank you very much for the conversation. We look forward to catching up in a year's time on what's been going on at Paramount.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking to Jeffrey Chu, Group CEO of Paramount Corporation. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
Beyond financial mastery, The Breakfast Grill with U-Mobile Biz, Malaysia's number one 5G network. 5G makes business.